I am 30 seconds early, but I'm gonna go. That way, if I get done earlier, you guys can just run off and get dinner and everything. All right. So, welcome everybody. I'm very excited to be here. My name is Chris, and I'm the CEO and owner, co-founder of the company called Architect and Connected Systems. We do lots of training for SharePoint. I'm mainly a SharePoint guy, right? I'm a SharePoint Server MVP. I'm not really a project person, except for within the last year, right? When you go talk to SharePoint people, they tend to say, "Oh, I don't know that project. I'm gonna leave that up to the project consultants and stuff like that," right? So a little bit about me, just a little bit, and then we'll get on to all the juicy stuff. I live in San Diego. Yay, no East Coast. It's all snowy, and then Seattle's all rainy, and I live down there. It's only an hour away, so it's real close. Like I said, I run our user group down in San Diego, our SharePoint user group. So we have a lot of really cool companies down there that come and provide us all their feedback. But I'm also an author of a SharePoint book, which I brought. And later, you'll have to pay attention, because I will randomly pick something from one of the slides, and I'll throw the football out. Whoever can catch the football and answer the question gets the book. Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Little bit about my project background. Okay, yeah, I said I'm a SharePoint guy. Yeah, that's true. On top of doing SharePoint titles, we started to get into the whole training of Project Server. So it's been interesting. It's completely different. I have been, other than being a trainer and running this company and doing the courseware, I have actually gone out and done very large projects. One, of course, which all of you know, is eBay. So we did their upgrade from 2007 to 2010 for SharePoint. It was lovely, good time. They do not run Project Server. They run a little internal tool called Scout. Anybody from Northern California in here? A couple people? Sweet. So you go to eBay, now you know. Hey, stay away from Scout. Ugh. The other thing, down in San Diego, there's a company called General Atomics. How many of you know what General Atomics does? No, they don't make atom bombs. No, they don't do that. They do that guy. Ah, right, the Predator plane. So that's actually made out of San Diego. I was a senior architect at General Atomics, and they do, in fact, use Project Server. Lots of them, right? They had 2003, they had 2007, they had 2010, and me being a SharePoint person, they come to me and they said, "Hey, well, you're doing this wonderful architecture of this, and you're going to move us from all these multiple SharePoint farms and get us onto a single platform, scalable, handle all the users." I said, yeah, that's good. We need you to do it for project too. What did I just say? SharePoint guy? I'm okay. No. So of course we call MCS. Okay, come on in. Do the project part. It was awesome. I had a blast, running through all this, figuring it out. Oh, what's RBS stand for? It's not remote blob storage. Okay, I got it. New terms and everything, right? So needless to say, I learned a lot there, and after that, I actually started doing my own stuff after the MCS guy. This real nice guy named Josh. Maybe some of you guys know him. He's actually running around out there. Very nice guy. So he helped us out. So here I am now, a total convert over to Project Server. This by far is the best version of Project Server I've seen out of all of them. It's the one. So I said, okay, I'm coming into Project Server. So now, as a SharePoint guy, coming in and learning all of that, it was foreign. I didn't know what a custom field was. I didn't know what a lookup table was. I didn't know any of that. So I thought, oh my goodness, all of my SharePoint peers that go, "Hey, nope, we don't want to touch it." There's a lot of them, right? So I said, oh, there must be a lot of other people out there too that they're just now seeing Project Server. They don't know any of these terms. They talk about apps, and they talk, "Hey, go buy our visualizations." Okay, but we just want to go and actually implement and get a project in there, which was the doing part. There's a lot of theory, but no doing. So this is all about the doing. So a little bit of an intro, and then a lot of the configuring. So I've kind of broken up into some steps that we're going to do. But that's going to jump us into my poll. All right, so a lot of you are sitting here, and obviously the title is for newbies and beginners to kind of look at Project Server. You can go on your phone, And you can go text to 22333, one of those codes, and then it's going to start to randomly populate on here. Or you could go out, you could tweet me. It doesn't show the tweet on there, so never mind. But you go to pollev.com/givenCJ, and then you can also just go click something on there, right? So we'll see some results show up on it. I'll give you a second to go do that. I'm just kind of curious where everybody stands in terms of these items. Yay, okay, I expect that. I'm glad. At least I got some target audience type of stuff going. Sweet. We love it. Love it when it runs great. Yes. Okay. All right. Good. 4 out of 50 people. Okay, good. There we go. Install. Okay, so nobody's at that install point just yet, huh? With no configuration? Good. All right. All right, so good. Good deal. So that'll help me a little bit with things. And I have a lot of other polls. If you come to some of the other sessions, I got a couple of sessions. So now that you know how to do this, you'll be able to you'll be able to do it right away from here on out. I've been trying to get all the presenters to actually use this because it's a really good tool. What this session is and what it is not. As I mentioned, I'm very technical. I'm really actually an IT pro/developer. So I'm not going to talk about Agile. I'm not going to talk about project management methodologies and theory or any of that. It is just purely the technical levers and concepts that are in Project Server and walking through each of the things you have to do before you can actually go create a project. That's it. All right. So if you were thinking it might be something else around those lines, yeah, we're not here. I'm not actually going to go walk through and do the install. I'm not going to do any of that. We're going to take it from the standpoint it's already installed, right? The PWA is there. Now what do you do? Okay, so this is where we're going to go with this. So introduction. Project Server runs on SharePoint. It is a search, or it's not a search service. It's a service application. It sits there. It runs on SharePoint, just like all of the other services that are running on SharePoint. Straight, easy, yay. Piggybacks off of a lot of the architecture of SharePoint, which obviously means that it requires SharePoint 2013. For those of you that says, oh, you have to go buy 2013, so what else, if all the purpose of me doing it is to run Project Server, what else do I get with SharePoint 2013? I have a session tomorrow, 9 o'clock, where I talk about all the top features for you as why you might go and implement 2013. What's all the other extra stuff you get? So I'll do that tomorrow if you're interested in that. When we talk about actually going and creating this service app, and I'm not going to do these parts, but I'm going to take it after these aspects, is that it creates what we call a project web app. And that web app is just a simple endpoint in SharePoint where you go and you actually go and put your projects in there. There's a lot of other things that are involved with it, but once we create the service app, you have a database, and all the data goes in the database. If you have on-premise, obviously you have access to that database. You can make calls to it. Yay. If you're online, which you all now have, 3 months free project online access. That was pretty awesome that they did that. Okay. You're not going to get access to that database. Okay. So one of the things I found really tricky walking the vendor floor is I realized I had to ask them, is this an on-premise solution or is it an O365 solution? I had to ask them right off the bat because it's completely different the way you approach it afterwards from that point. So that being said, the installation is easy, relatively. How many of you actually gone through and set up SharePoint and then set up Project Server? A few of you. Okay, yeah, the install part. There's a lot of work involved, right? You have to set up SharePoint. Whoa, okay. Well, you just wanted to install Project Server. There's a lot in there, right? Especially when you get into the apps part. So again, I'm not going to go through all that, but those would be the steps of which you would walk through to finally get to a point where you'd have the PWA. And then that's where we're going to start to walk into what I'm going to actually be talking about. Once you have this PWA set up, these are these main elements. And I'm going to talk about each of these main elements so that you're familiar with those terms. So that when you go back and you're talking to the consultants or you're talking to your dev guys, or whatever it might be, you'll know what they're talking about. So, just real quick demo here of what this looks like in terms of SharePoint. This is the central administration site, and just to show the integration points, Once you get into manage the service apps, you end up creating a project service application. In this case, I have a Contoso's project, and I have a couple of PWAs in here. So again, I said I'm not going to walk through all of that aspect, but once these things are created, that's your endpoint, which you would then go to, and there's your lovely PWA you see on everybody's demo screens on all the other sessions. Okay, so again, I didn't walk through all of that aspect. The goal is to walk through what you need to do to actually start creating projects. Okay. That being said, I have lots of little cool little tips that I'm going to kind of put up here. So you'll see this little tip thing in here. The interesting thing is, because Project Server runs on SharePoint, it's really resource intensive. You probably read those specs on that. So I'll just give you a tip. You know, even though I didn't walk through all of that, you need to make sure that IT has set this up. If you're going to run it on-prem, if you're going to go O365, you don't have to worry about it. We love that, right? When we talk about Project Server 2013, what a lot of people don't realize is, unless you've been around Project for a long time, which I found out the hard way at General Atomics, if you're on 2007, you have Project 2007. If you're on Project Server 2010, you have Project 2010. And I was like, oh, I can't just upgrade everybody at the same time, because you have to go update the desktops too, right? So one tip, make sure you're ready to roll that out. One of the other tips as far as the entire setting up, the getting the PWA instance, at General Atomics, what ended up happening is they created multiple PWAs. I kind of look back on that and go, oh, I probably shouldn't have done it like that. And the reason I say you shouldn't do it like that, they had their reasons of why they wanted to. But the thing is that you don't get that nice, beautiful portfolio analysis stuff that they so much talk about right now, as that is why Project Server is so amazing. And the reason is, if I go and I create those portfolio analysis things, I have to do it in every PWA, and the data is completely separated out. I would have preferred, looking back, to say, single PWA, throw everything in there, yay, the CIO can now go look at all their projects in one single instance, right? So that's just a tip. Think about that as you run through. Absolutely. Yeah, you could totally do that. Because at some point, if you have, we were talking to some customers and they have 15,000 projects sitting in there, and you're looking at it going, oh, the UI starts to slow down. So yeah, pull them out, put them somewhere else. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good tip as well. So configuring PWA. These are the steps. Okay, these are the steps that if you're really, really going to go all out or all in to Project Server, these are the steps you have to do. Okay, create your resources, create some cost types. Some of these steps are optional, okay, and I'll tell you why they're optional as I get to each of them. Create some departments, configure the permissions, custom fields, calendars, fiscal queries, projects, tasks, and then finally your BI. So these are the steps I'm going to run through. So by the time I'm done with this, you will know and be able to see everything you're supposed to do configuring from scratch. Okay. So first thing, before we get into this, each of those steps that I just talked about, for every PWA, you'd have to do all those steps. Okay, so again, it kind of goes back that it's nice to have a single PWA, so you don't have to do all those steps I just had on that slide. Yeah. So first one, resources. They always talk about resource management. There's a whole bunch of solutions that the vendors have, and resource management type of stuff. When we look at resources, obviously we tend to think of them as people. Right, so we go, we set up a resource, it's a work resource. But there's a lot of different types of resources you can set up in Project Server. And so the other thing we look at, when I say an enterprise resource, it exists in Project Server. When you have the old MPP file and you create a resource there, that's what we would call a local resource. It lives in that project, and no other projects see it. Right, but when I create an enterprise project resource, all the projects can see it and use it, and you share it. And that's ideal because later on you want to do reporting against it, you can see the resource utilization of that resource across all the projects. Local ones only tell you inside of the single one. And there's three types of resources. There's work, material, and cost. And there's some subtypes off of that. And I'm going to go show you how to actually go and create these things. Now, when you go create the resource, you have to tell it what type it is. Okay, again, work, material, or cost. Whether it's budget, generic, those are kind of optional. Obviously, it has a name, but then there's these optional things. And you don't have to configure those things, but later on, when you get into more advanced functionality and you want to do reporting and slicing and that type of stuff, you may actually want to set those values. Now, the thing is, if you're a huge company and you have tens of thousands of people, you're probably not going to want to type those people in one at a time, right? Probably not ideal. So what they have in 2013 is the ability to go point at Active Directory to a group. Okay, you can't point at domain users. I wish there were some cases I wish you would, but it doesn't. Right, so you have to create a group. You point it at it, and it's just going to pull those people in, and it's going to pre-create the resources for you, and they're all going to come in as work resources, so people, individuals. That's ideal, and you can go and point it at multiple different groups. Ideally, what happens is if you're doing projects, you know those defined groups of people that are going to be working on those projects. So it's likely you already have an AD group that pretty well matches up to the people that will use it. No, it won't do a wildcard on the name, like on when you go to the group, and I'll show it here in a second. No, it won't do that. So, what's that question? Oh, sorry, he's asking, can you do a wildcard type of thing? When you select the Active Directory sync, yeah, it won't do it. It wants a group in there. And I'm actually demo. Let's create one.
So is the import one time only, or does it do ongoing synchronization?
One time. You could set up your own things to keep it in sync, right? I'm a dev guy. I know all the API, PSI endpoints. You could totally make it sync everything all the time. So one of the first things here, and I apologize, the environment I use, that's the way it sets up my image here. One of the first things you see on the PWA, if you've ever seen any of the old ones, like in my instance at General Atomics, I saw 2003, 2007, 2010, and there were a lot more links on the left-hand side. And it totally threw me for a loop going, where did all the stuff go? How many of you, when you first saw Project Server, thought the same thing? Yeah, okay. So these links, those aren't all the links. So the first thing I always do when I get to a PWA is I go into the PWA settings and I tell it that I want it to show everything in the quick launch. Took me a while to find this the first time I was doing it. Granted, the first time I did all this was a long time ago. So I add all those back in, and there you get all your links back. Oh, I was so happy when I got all those back. So what you'll see is these links are your most important access points into the PWA and doing the configuration of all these things I'm going to show you here. So first thing is the resources. Clicking on resources, we'll see there's no resources in here. I could, up in the tab, go and click this and say new, and I could manually type these in. But again, I don't want to do that. So we'll go back and we'll say, all right, yeah, let's actually use the Active Directory resource synchronization to do this. So they provide us a little link. The link goes away the first time we add a resource. To get it back, you just go up to the PWA settings, and there'll be a link here, Active Directory resource pool sync. So we'll click it from there. At this point, sure, go ahead.
Really quick, Doc.
Yes. It points only at AD. Yeah, it won't point at a SharePoint group. I mean, again, if you make your own PSI calls, you can make it and pull the data in, but then you gotta make sure that timer job's running, updating those all that values in the user profile list, yeah. So I have a few groups, so I'll say, oh yeah, the execs. All right, let's add the execs. It's not like the execs really do project management, it's all of us, right? But yeah, okay. So we'll add those in, we'll say save and synchronize now. And so it's going to go do an AD call, and it's going to go grab everybody that's in that list, enumerate them, and it's going to create them. So it's fairly fast, so it might be done. Yeah, it's done. It's pretty fast. So I didn't have to create those, right? I didn't have to manually go and do that. Now obviously, these are all work resources, so you can see work. If I wanted to go create other ones, like I said, there's a lot of different types. So we come in here and say, okay, well, I could say it's a material or a cost, right? And those resources can be assigned. Those could be. There's a lot of. I have some other slides that talk about the cost type of things here, but I could manually go in and create different other things. Okay, but just again, I'm not going to go into a lot of the details there. Just I'm walking through the simple steps of getting Project Server up and running. So there we go. Yay, we have some resources. No, in this case, there's no permissions assigned to anybody. And they have a slides for permissions and setting the permissions up, talking about SharePoint and Project Server versus. Great, so let's switch back over here. So step one's done, we got our resources in. That really is, yeah, you gotta have resources, otherwise there's no point in doing any project stuff. So try to use Active Directory, just little tips, saves you a lot of time. If you get into some cost reporting, some people will want to map some of these resources if they change it to a material or a cost type to back-end financial systems and have a mapping between the two, and I'll talk about that in a second. It is important, obviously work resources are work resources, right? But later on, you know, if you pick one that's tasked over material, trying to get back in and change things, not so happy. So you got to be real careful about that. So cost types is the second step. And this is an optional step. Cost types are these things that really are allow you to do that mapping back to the back end of your some financial system. Maybe it's SAP, maybe it's some other something, whatever, right? So you want to be able to take the data, pull the reports out, map those resources, and somehow have some kind of nice mapping. And it's mainly for like Dynamics and things where they have metadata on their side that you want to have matched up, right? And so that you export the data, you do a join between the two and like SSRS or something else, yay, and you have that mapping. It's an optional thing, right? Does not required, but later on, if you want to do a lot more fancier reports, you should probably, you know, set these things. Now, real simple slide. Let's jump back over here. Cost types, and I'm going to talk about custom fields and lookup tables later and a couple other slides, but there's a link here, and it took me a while to figure out, I'm like, what is a custom field in a lookup table, right? Totally brand new, looking at it, and I go, oh, and once you kind of figure it out, you go, all right, it's easy. Think of it as terms of, it's just adding metadata, so if you have a SharePoint list and you add a new column, that's a custom field type. I can add it to a task, I can add it to a project, I can add it to resources, and it's just adding extra metadata that I want to fill in later and keep track of or put in my reports. So one of the metadatas that we have in here, the custom fields, is called cost type. And if we wanted to utilize that, you'll see that this custom field actually points to a lookup table called the cost table, or cost type. And you could consider these lookup tables as simply a table in a database, and you just put values in it, right? And then you can reference it as you're actually creating things. So cost type, we click on that, and it gives us the ability to add values in here. So I would say, typically you would say direct cost, you would say indirect cost, and then below those, you do something like labor, and you'd move it out, you click the little thing, moves it down to a second level, and then you can move it up. Oh, there we go. So then we have a labor underneath direct, and so now later on I could go and assign resources and tag these cost types, so that would map back to the financial system somewhere. Sorry about that. Easy, okay, and I'll get back to the creating custom fields and doing some more lookup tables in a second. Again, that's an optional step. If reporting and cost typing, that type of stuff is important to you, you need to make sure you go get the metadata from wherever it's coming from and then fill this all in. Not the most intuitive UI. It took me a little while to figure out, add this, move it up, move it down, right? It can be tricky sometimes. So next thing we have, my little tip here, not required, I already said that. Departments. Departments is an optional step as well. However, it's pretty important. When we look at departments, it's a type of classification. I can go and say these resources exist in this department. I could say these projects exist in this department. I can then go later on and report some things. I could say, oh, I want to do a portfolio analysis only for this department. Okay, but it's a totally optional step. It's not required that you do this. But later, if you want to get a lot more advanced, you should create your departments.
So departments don't come in
They do not. They do not. You have to manually put them in there. Yes. And I'm going to do that in a second. And then you have to go and set the resources. Yeah. And again, you can automate it. You could write code, a little PowerShell or something that pulls it all and sets it all. I don't know. Maybe you could go get a vendor to do it for you. You know, write a tool for you, an app for it. Again, it's really driven around being able to slice and dice across reporting inside of Project Server. So how do we do that? So we'll switch over. Similar notion, server settings. We have custom fields and lookup tables. There is a lookup table called department. So we click on that. And again, this page looks exactly similar to the cost types. But here's where I'd start to go and have to type in all my departments. And again, can you script this? Yes, absolutely. You can totally script this. You can have somebody dev go and fill this in for you. Or if you only have a few departments, well, we could type them in. So we could say executive. We could say HR, IT, finance. All right. Great. They could also be tiered. We could also put tiering in there. Once we've defined the departments, now we want to go assign it to resources or to the projects. And at this point, I haven't created any project. I'm still setting up the server, okay? So I do have some resources. So we'll go over, we'll check out some of these resources. We'll look at Dan Jump. He's the CEO of Contoso. So we'll edit him. And we'll scroll down. And we'll see here it is, resource departments. We click the ellipsis. And there's the departments we've just set up. Again, no, it doesn't come from AD, unfortunately. But like I said, we could script getting the departments in, and we could script actually setting this field. It can totally be done. So we'll just say he's an executive. Perfect. Save. Cross my fingers, it's going to save. Yeah, good. All right. Any questions about this so far? Yeah, so there's, if you select more than one, you can say bulk edit. I don't remember, here we go. Yeah, most of it's in there. So it only shows you the things that can be bulk edit across. Yeah, so it's not a lot of things, but the department's there. So you could select multiple people and do this. Save you a step. Very good question. Yeah. All right, switching back, what's our next step? Oh, we'll probably have a tip. I bet you there's a tip. Yes. Again, departments are not required, but they are very, very useful for later on. Okay. Signing permissions. Ooh, the tough one. This was by far coming into 2010. There was no SharePoint permission model, so it was all project server permissions, categories, and all this other stuff. And I was like, whoa, what is this? In Project Server 2013, everyone, including myself, being a new person that looks at this and goes, whoa, that's a lot of configuration, a lot of things. In 2013, they created a new permission mode called SharePoint permission mode. So all I have to do is it gives me SharePoint groups, and I can just add people into the groups, and then it makes it real easy. However, those of us that have been running Project Server for a very long time, it's 2007, 2010, and we're so used to the granularity that exists in the project server permissions mode, first thing we do, switch that over to project, because the default is SharePoint mode. And you gotta switch it over, and you have to use PowerShell to do that. And I'm gonna show you how to do that. But all the cases of which I've actually gone in project server land so far, we've switched it over to project server permissions mode, just because of the flexibility. And also in the permissions, that department then comes into play, too, because I could start building things and say, if you're in the same department, then you get to see all your department's projects type of thing. Yeah. That being said, like I said, real simple, SharePoint groups. These are the sets of groups that exist. You can't create any more groups. You can't change anything about the groups that are there. I mean, you could delete the group if you want to, but that's a very bad idea. But it again, it's designed such that it makes it easier for people to kind of consume this permissions notion inside of Project Server and SharePoint. But then, like I said, everybody wants to switch it back. That I have to deal with. Switching it back brings all these extra new configuration links onto the PWA settings page. Okay, lots of them. And, you know, here's the different things you're going to see. I could spend 5 days talking about how to configure the permissions on this. It can get really, really intricate and complex. Like I said, things where you say, oh, if a program manager, project manager has this person who's their manager and they're in the same department, let them see these projects of this person, but don't let them see any of the other stuff. It gets really complex. You can't do things like that in SharePoint permission mode. It's kind of like all or nothing. You can, but once you move over, it's gone. And then if you move back, all that's gone. So you gotta be once you switch, you better stay, right? Wherever you go. Good question. Like I said, I'm not gonna go through all those. I'll show you the demo of these actual items and switching over to product server permission mode. So, got our resources, great. We're gonna go over server settings. Notice that there is this empty space under here in timesheet managers. That's where you would have seen back in the older ones, 2010, you would have seen a whole bunch of links. But we don't see those links here, right? So it's by default, PWA is in SharePoint permissions mode. So I'm going to go and say, okay, let's go look up regular SharePoint style. Go in and look at the people in groups. These people in groups will see, oh, yeah, there's some actual groups that don't exist by default when you create a SharePoint team site. So there's team members, administrators for Project Web App. There's some actual, if we click more, we're going to see there's about 3-4 other different groups that get created that are Project Server focused. So the code inside of Project Server is looking for the names of those groups. And again, if you delete it, you rename it. This is very bad. Don't do that. But you go in, you add people to that, and it's meant to be really simple. But if you go the simplistic route, you lose all that flexibility. So we'll just look here. We'll say administrators. I don't think there's anybody in there, right? Am I in there? No. If you wanted to add new admins for your PWA, just use SharePoint to add them in there. Okay.
So,
yeah.
So from a permissions view, right, one of the things that's a big no-no in SharePoint is either granting too many explicit permissions or breaking inheritance or having deeply nested groups, and it's a performance issue.
Yeah.
Is that not the case in projects? Does it behave differently? Or?
All this is using Project Server is just looking at this in terms of what it wants to do with it. It has nothing to do on the SharePoint side. Right? SharePoint's not using those groups.
No, but I mean in SharePoint. Yeah, it's a
yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're using those groups to lock down SharePoint stuff, okay, yeah, it makes sense. Don't put how many ACLs can you have in there before 50,000, right? 50,000 and it's done. Yeah. So it's in SharePoint mode. So how do we get into Project Server mode? Well, if you've just been given the PWA at this point, someone created it for you, there's no way for you to go through the UI and get this over into Project Permissions mode. You have to have one of the IT guys, and have guys or gals, has to go and run the command to actually switch it. Okay, so I just happen to have this command sitting here. It's set SP Project Permission mode. Pass the URL. What's that? Sorry. It's in the slide. It's in the slide somewhere. Yeah. So I copy that. I open a SharePoint management cell on the SharePoint server that's hosting Project Server. I right click, paste it in there, and you notice that dash mode. I know it's kind of small. That dash mode tells it Project Server mode, and it's going to go change the database, make it all pointers. Everything's going to be there. Once this is done running, the PWA is going to change, and maybe it's already changed. We'll go see. Ooh, it did. Look at all that. All our new stuff is back here. The delegate stuff, there is a neat little part of a Project Server where you can delegate. You can run as another person. That doesn't work in SharePoint permissions mode. You have to be back in this mode in order for that to work. And that is a very cool feature, by the way. So it's hard to go and say I'm going to run in SharePoint mode and lose that. Should figure it out when you do the four databases together and it makes the one. It should see everything's in Project Server and that database should already be configured, right? So you shouldn't have to do this. Now, if you are using a tool and moving the data over, you're going to want to make sure you kind of pre-configure the environment, which would include that step. But a database upgrade, you wouldn't have to do anything. So now that stuff's there. Users, groups, categories, all that wonderful, spend 5 days talking about how all the different things you can do with security now exists. Okay, and it is a lot. There's a lot going on there. I'll leave that to the side as research to do on your own. All right, so we'll jump back here. So again, the tip is SharePoint permissions makes it really simple to assign permissions, but you lose a lot of this configuration and flexibility, and some of the features disappear. Large organizations, or those of you who have been using Project Server, you're probably going to switch straight back over to Project Server permissions mode, or it's already going to be there, and it'll be upgraded when you get there. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Next step, I've already kind of pointed at the custom fields and the lookup tables. I didn't create a custom field. I didn't create a new lookup table. So that's our next step. And this is, up till now, step four was required. I mean, you're going to have to configure permissions, okay? Step five is also, you will do this. You're going to create custom fields. You're going to create lookup tables. Guaranteed. And if you don't, if you install apps, they're probably going to create them on behalf, right? So you need to, you at least need to understand what these things are.
Yeah, for four data, which permissions are on them?
For OData, obviously, it's going to be like if you're going through the UI from a permission standpoint, it's going to be like if you're going through the UI. If you can't see it, it's not going to show up, okay? I thought you were going to ask me, what does the custom field name look like whenever it comes across the OData feed? It's ugly. It says custom underscore and then the GUID of the field. So it makes it really hard. And it's not discoverable by, like, if you're developing. It's not something, it's tough. It makes you have to manually go change your code to pick up that custom field. It's hard. But the data does come across, though. At least it's there. You can see it. All right, so custom fields. What is it? Well, I love this little thing, New York. Metadata, that's it. Custom fields are metadata. Just like I gave you the example, adding a column to a SharePoint list, you know, that title, the create date, the modified date, the author, all of that stuff. That's all a custom field is. I can add custom fields to tasks, resources, and projects, and that extends them. So I'm able to add more data that we want to track about those things. And like we were just talking about, that data can now be queried. It can be pulled down through the REST feeds. They've shown you all kinds of neat, cool things using Excel to pull the data and munge on it and show you nice visualizations. There's a lot of neat fields. It's great. You can get a lot done. There's a lot of columns that exist in the database for tasks and projects and stuff. But you're going to find you're going to add them. At some point, you're going to want to add these things. You can add a lot of them, but I really don't think you're going to add 500,000 and a bunch of columns to a project. Right? You might, but it's probably not the best idea, right? The UI will slow down after a while. When you create a custom field, just like if you were creating a column in a database or a column in a SharePoint list, it's going to have a type to it. And so here's the types. We have cost, we have date, duration, flag, number, text. And they can be just as advanced as some of the columns you have in SharePoint in terms of using a formula for it. So maybe there's two columns and you want to do some kind of multiplication against it, an addition, some kind of math operator. Great, go for it. Some of the columns can be rolled up and down. You know, when you have a summary task, you have a cost, and you want to see that cost get rolled up or just kind of see how it happens to roll down. Those are all parts of the configuration of custom fields. Yeah. It's very similar, yeah, very similar. And they're all based off of VB, right? not my favorite, but yeah. So then we have lookup tables. And the lookup table, we have the fields, and then we have lookup tables, which I already showed you. I showed you the cost type. We talked about department, and there's a couple of other ones, health and RBS. But we're just looking at these from the tasks you have to do. One of the more important ones that you really should set up is the team name lookup table. Anybody know what that does? Yeah. Beautiful. Team generic resource. So you go create a generic resource. You assign it to a task, doing a task assignment. Anyone who is in that team will see it and can take control of it. All right? It's awesome. But if you don't set the team lookup table up, you can't use it. Nothing's going to work. Right? You're not going to have this generic sense of a resource. So that is one of the things we're going to look at here. So switching back over, got my custom fields and lookup tables. Click on that again. Anything up there? Yeah. I can create a new custom field. I can give it any type of name. So here we have project. One of the things you have to do in order to utilize workflows is you have to create a cost type, a cost field type, so that the workflow can make some kind of decisions off of it. So we can just say something real simple, project cost. We choose the type of entity. In this case, it's going to be project, and we want the type to be a cost. Yay. We can decide whether we want it to go point to a lookup table, a formula. Because I chose cost, well, it's not going to map to a lookup table. We could say this field is specifically targeted at a department. Here's where department starts to come into play. You don't get to play with this fancy type of departments unless you define all your departments. So like I said, it was an optional step, but you lose out on a lot of other things later. Great. I'm not going to walk through the rest of that stuff, but the idea is we created a custom field. But like I said, the most important one is the team name. So that requires, we see there's no lookup table in here for teams. So that one of the things you have to do, they don't pre-create it for you, is just say, all right, we create a new lookup table called teams. And we go put some teams in there. So this could be, and again, this is like for generic resources. So we'd say database admin. We could say .net, oh, it doesn't like dots, net developer. We could say something like project manager. I think there's a few of those running around here. What do you think? So we put these in there. We say save. And now we have these generic team names, which at this point we go over to team name. We have to tell that to point at that lookup table so it knows when I'm filling it out. There it is. We say teams. We save it. Beautiful. That's just a warning. It says, once you do this, that's it. So now that team is there, if we go look at our resources, we could go and assign these particular individuals to a team. Ooh, don't do that. Right, we'll just do Dan then. We scroll down and we see team assignment pool. All right, so we could check that and go and say, all right, yep, this person is .NET developer, wonderful. By checking this checkbox, it means this particular resource is the generic one. So this is the generic one you would assign to the task so other people could then, that are also .NET developers, grab a hold of. Okay, so this is actually a pretty important step, right? It's very pivotal to the whole concept of generic resources and assigning those resources. So I would probably say this is required to do. Great, save and continue. And that's our custom fields and lookup tables. Questions about that particular aspect? I know a lot of people get confused sometimes, just those two topics. Yeah. That's a good one. I'm not a PMO project manager type, but I'd probably take the easy way out and just put one in there and put the cost for that guy and just have it on there. And at least then it's there. You know it's getting calculated and it's in there. It's probably a couple other ways to do it, but if anyone wants to offer. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talk about that. They'd have to be somehow named to something in the team. And you could do, I can't remember the hierarchy part, if you put the hierarchy in, if it'll pick up all the way up. Does anybody know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember a lot of people talk about that. I've never had the situation where I get in and actually mess with it enough to go, oh, look at that, the cost changed. All right, switch back over. Got a couple more steps, and then we're out of here. Little tip, custom fields, lookup tables, very powerful ways of adding metadata to your project server entities and objects. Once you figure out the powerfulness of actually adding this metadata, you're probably going to love it, and you're going to add a whole bunch of them. How many, just out of kind of curiosity, who has the most custom fields and custom tables in here? You may get like hundreds. 20. All right. Is he going to win with 20? Whoa. What do you got? Wow. Across all the entity types? Okay. Sweet. Wow. So you are heavy users of extending project. Nice. Next step, calendars and fiscal periods. Took me a while to figure this out back in the day. Calendar fiscal periods, if you're going to do, it's 2012, we made it through 2012, right? So hopefully you didn't have a mind calendar in there in your project server and it ended. But when you look at enterprise calendars, obviously here in the States, we work 9 to 5. 8 hours a day, right? Monday through Friday. Probably our American traditions make us, we actually work a lot more than that and don't get paid for it, right? The European countries, no, they work exactly that and then they go play and have family and all that great stuff. When we look at a place like Spain, the holiday calendar they have, the hours they work is completely different. Completely different, right? Come in at 10, 11 o'clock, you hang out for an hour or two, then you have lunch, you have your siesta, and then you come back and you work the rest of it till like 8, so 7, 8 o'clock. And then you have dinner at 10, 11, right? Totally different. That's the way they do it. And their work hours, maybe about 30 hours a week, okay? That's a different calendar, right? So you have to go and create that calendar. I don't know, I haven't set up a project server in Spain to know if it sets the calendar properly for all of that. I don't think it does, but maybe. And you think about the calendar, if you have an organization, they're all over the place, you're likely gonna, you'll go and create this calendar. It's interesting because I thought, oh, when you go in to create the calendar, that it would have a UI for it in the PWA. No. It opens project, you got to create it in there, and then it makes the call back and sends it in there. I found that very odd first time I saw it, but I kind of get it. But then we have fiscal periods. So we define a calendar, and we define the fiscal period, and that just kind of gives you this ability to create these weeks that you want people to work, right? And the weeks map later to timesheets. The customers I've been at so far don't utilize timesheets. I haven't seen many. There's people, anybody in here? Yeah? Ooh, wow, lots of you. Wow, okay. Is it everybody, like, if they're touching the project, they have to do a timesheet? Absolutely. Oh, when you let it, yeah, okay. That's one of the cool parts that I realized as you do the timesheets. It will actually pre-populate with all the tasks that you've been working on across all the projects. So pre-populates the thing. I thought that was coolest ever. Wow, blew me away. But at the same time, timesheets can be set up such that you're not always working on a project, But you have administrative time, you did holiday, you sick time, whatever it might be, and it's really robust going in there. I know a lot of other people, they tend to have other timesheet HR tracking type of things, and that's why they won't use the timesheets. But obviously, I can see there's a lot of you that actually do use this. The approvals, I found that kind of tough to deal with the first time I got in there and messed around with it. But you can set it up. You create timesheets. It pre-populates. They go and submit it, and then someone has to approve it. By default, there's no timesheet managers. So this is a step you'd have to go in and set all the resources to have a timesheet manager so that when they go and submit their timesheet, it goes to the manager, and then they say, okay, yep, approve, and then it goes off into timesheet land, right? That's a lot of work. Especially if you have lots of resources, then you get back to the how are we going to populate all of that, possibly with Active Directories Manager, and get that in there. You can absolutely do that as well. You can code that. I talked about the administrative time stuff, so we'll just do a quick demo of this particular step. And I got 10 minutes. All right. Server settings. So you're going to see that get the server settings. There's these things, fiscal periods, time reporting periods, line classifications. When we look at a fiscal periods, we have to go and define the year. So we do that. We say, let's define this. You select your particular creation method, whatever. You set the prefix, sequence number, those types of things. What this is going to do, it creates these named. This is actually the title of it. And you can't have the same title. So this is kind of interesting. You always, it's best to put a suffix or prefix in there. Makes a lot of sense to do that. But you'll see that here we have these quarters that get created. Once that is done, it's a really simple aspect of it. The part that kind of caught me, I'm like, oh, okay, what do I do now? Because you still can't do a timesheet. If I try to do a timesheet right now, it's just going to kind of say, no, you don't have any open periods to actually do a timesheet. So, oh, wow, how does that work? So I go back in and say, oh, time reporting period. Once you've defined the fiscal period, you can then go in here and say, oh, right, let's just go back to the beginning of the year, first week in January, 52 periods, 7 days, create bulk. It's then going to create them, but it did not save them. I always got caught up on that one. So you have to click save, and now we have time periods of which the people can go fill out their timesheets. And so if you don't do that, again, you won't be able to do timesheets. Okay, so that's a required step. So now if I go and say my timesheet, it gives me these administrative line items. And this is always a tricky part in Project Server. You have all these windows that are framed out, and they have their little scrolly bars. It took me a while to go, wait, how am I supposed to fill the timesheet in? So it looks like it's grayed out, and yeah, it kind of is. You have to check the checkbox. And then you could come over and then you can start typing stuff in. It just, you know, it comes with time, I suppose. So you go, you fill in your hours. And again, if you had had tasks in here from a project, all the tasks that you had actually been working on would show up in here, and then you assign the hours to it. And then when you say save, you can actually go and say send progress for all the tasks, and it fills it in and it sends all the updates back for the tasks. Done. And your timesheet's done too. Yeah.
Is this tied into the Azure Workflow service? Or is this
no, not tied. It just, yeah, it's all project. Yeah. This is, they have the queuing process of which all these things occur. So, yeah, there we go. We got our wonderful timesheet set up. Easy. So I think I got to make sure I move a little bit faster here. You guys have been asking a lot of really good questions. So there's a tip. If you're not multi-country, probably not going to need a second calendar, so don't worry about it. If you plan to do timesheets, you have to set up the fiscal period, and you have to set up all those reporting periods. So now that we've done all of that, that was a lot, right? There's a lot there. I mean, just thinking what departments I'm going to put in, what cost types, which resources, now you can start creating projects. It took a while. That just took me 54 minutes just to talk about it. Just imagine doing it. It's going to take you a few days. So when we go, we say we want to create a project. Well, there's a lot of different projects that we types of projects we can create. There's an enterprise project, there's a SharePoint task list project. We can create them via the PWA, or we could go in project server. As long as our project server is connected to our PWA, we could create them there and publish them to SharePoint. A lot of ways in which we can do that. We can create new types of projects that have different templates and different project pages tied to them. Project detail pages, it took me a little while to kind of figure out what are these. They abbreviate them PDPs, right? Okay. So these, there's four of them that come out of the box. They're just simply a web part page. That's all they are, web part page. And these web part pages have some web parts on them. You configure them to show or not show the custom fields you've set up so that you enter the data in, and then that, yay, it's very simple type of deal. You can create your own pages. You can set up project types that know that they're only supposed to have certain types of pages. Workflows, by far the coolest thing I've ever seen. The course I wrote, I have Project Server Inside Out, and there's a massive workflow section. This was awesome. The first time I saw this, you go in, you create these stages, you create these phases. SharePoint Designer can read that out of there. Then you go create the workflow. Any custom fields you've set up on the project show as workflow variables. So now you can go in and build this very complex workflow based off of data coming in from the project, and then as that flows through, you can hit your stages, and all of it gets recorded. Amazing. Amazing. This is probably the thing that impresses me most about Project Server is the workflow aspect. Yeah. Project sites, when we create a project, you have the option to say, yeah, go create a project site, which is simply a SharePoint site where you would put all your SharePoint files, you know, doing the document libraries, maybe a separate task list, whatever it might be. Simple SharePoint site. One of the neat features that I'll talk about in the morning, site mailboxes, when we go and create a project with a project site, we can enable site mailboxes that would then create an email address in Exchange automatically so that anyone who is a member of that site can see it in Exchange, and you can just send emails, and then you all see the emails that go to that site. And it's like it's a project mailbox is what it would become. Very cool stuff. That being said, let's go take a real quick demo into creating projects. So in our little quick launch sidebar, there's the projects link. I don't have any projects. We go up in the top part, we'll see that there's the new button. In the dropdown, we'll see enterprise project and a SharePoint task list. I'll just do enterprise project for right now. This is a project detail page. So I say, oh, test. If I added more custom fields, they don't automatically show up on here. I have to go edit this web part page and then tell it which ones I want to show on this particular page. Right? So I could create multiple different pages where I've told it to show different things and then have those assigned to different types of projects. So we'll save. It's going to create a queue job. Took me a while to figure out the whole queuing aspect, and it got even more interesting when you do REST development. You're like, well, how did I create a session, and how does it know the queue is supposed to do my session? It gets really weird after a while. But if you want to know more about that, come to my dev session on Wednesday morning. But there's some queue jobs sitting here. There's actually a service that's running, a Windows service on the back end, that's picking up these jobs as you submit them and executing it. So when we talk about building out a project server farm, a lot of people are like, well, should we do a separate farm for just project server? Or should we put it in our SharePoint farm? And then previously, a lot of people would say, no, I'll just create a separate one and have them separated out. No, it's you all put it in one single farm. And the reason is, we'll have some slides in a little while, is that all the tasks I'm going to create in a project, it needs a my site to do the work management so that when I go to the my site, I see all the tasks that have been assigned to me all across SharePoint and all across every project. Okay, so it all has to be in SharePoint. You don't want to go create multiple SharePoint farms and go configure my sites more than you have to, right? Ugh, don't want to do that. So this guy should be done. There we go. We have a project. And we have this little area here. We could go and start creating tasks. So I'm not going to be very fancy. Task one. It took me a little while to figure out that this task, it has these custom fields in here. But we also have the ability to, if we scroll over, do an assignment. I've created the project resources, but the project doesn't have a team. So I have to go as part of some of the steps here of creating a project. Even though I have this, I'm trying to create this task, I can't assign anybody to it because I didn't tell it that there's these people that should go with this. So in the tab, we say build team. Okay, great, I'll leave this. It's going to show me all the resources we've created, and I have to select them and move them over locally to the project before I can assign them to a task. Okay, again, it took me a while to figure this out. Wasn't entirely intuitive. We select a few people. We say, yep, great, save and close. Now I can go back to the project, to the tasks, and I can actually assign one of those individuals to this. Oh, that's the project. So, oh. Hurry. You still have to assign those people to the project. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So we do the drop down and we say, oh yeah, let's assign these people. Great. Save it. Saving's one thing, closing's one thing, publishing is another. Took a while. Whoa. I'm like, wait, why can't you see that? I just saved it. I just put this resource in. You have to publish it for everybody to see. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so that's creating projects, and I would go into other things, but I only got a few more minutes left, and I want to make sure I give out this book stuff. So back over. We got our projects. Here's some different tips. Workflows, use them. If you haven't figured them out yet, go play with them because they're really cool, and I don't have enough time to go do any type of workflow. Once we've created the project, obviously we create tasks. I just showed you creating a task and assigning the resources. The one interesting thing about tasks, there in the database, there are so many columns for a task, it's insane. But you only see a few. I scrolled all the way over when I did the resource name. There are views that you can create that can show everything. And it took me a while to figure that. You change the view, and then you can see other fields. And you can edit those other fields through those views, but the default task summary only shows you a few things. Took a while. Right? Each task, everybody probably knows about tasks, so I'm just kind of skip this part. The tracking methods was always interesting to me, though. Yeah, go ahead. All right. Yes, okay. You go in, so what'll happen if you go and you try to do a drop, oh, you can't see it. All right, we'll do this, I gotta hurry. These views that are here, so you see task summary, you may see a view on here and you select it, and then what's gonna happen, it says access is denied. Okay, who knows how to fix that? Permissions issue, but you're an admin. So you're like, wait, I'm supposed to have access to everything. Oh, the moment you switch it over to project server permissions mode, now you got to go in here. Remember exactly, it might be categories. Maybe not. Maybe users. Scroll this guy. There's a list of all the views. Oh, that's not it. Somewhere there's a list of views. I don't remember this. There's a list of views, and if you don't check the checkbox, even though you're an admin, you go it and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Is something wrong with product server? Did I break something? No, it's just because you didn't check the checkbox in the product server permissions that allow you to see the view. I've had that happen a lot of times. All right, so switch back. All right, so we got our task. The tracking methods, there's four different ways, and this kind of gets a little bit into whole project management, PMO kind of level, which I was trying to stay away from. But you can do things where you type in the task, you say percent of work complete. You could do it by, the actual amount of work, right? All these settings that are here. And depending on how you've set that, different people have different notions about how they want it. When they go to edit a task through the Gantt chart view, columns will go read-only or write-only depending on the settings right there. And so every PWA you go, if you move from one company to another, they may have a different setting, and you go try to edit it, and you're like, whoa, why is it not working? Because they changed one of those settings. Okay? You have to determine as part of the setup how you're going to track your tasks and how you're going to allow them to enter that data. if they're not doing it all through the timesheets anyway. That being said, again, I mentioned this already, the SharePoint My Tasks is probably the second coolest thing out of all of Project Server. You go to your My site, you go to the task, it shows you all the tasks you've been assigned. Unfortunately, the thing takes, it runs every 15 minutes when you go to the page, so if I did create a task, assign it to me, we don't have enough time for you to see it to show up. The architecture of it is such that the work management service will go out and query the SharePoint content databases, it'll query Project Server, it'll query Exchange, it'll pull that data in, saves it into a local list. You can go then click on it, and it'll take you to wherever that task is. And then you can edit it. And then, boom, it updates. That is amazing. That is awesome. Yay. I already did the creating task. I'm just going to skip through there. Then you have the intelligence stuff. You've probably seen enough of the BI. You've got everything set up. You created your projects. You created your tasks. Wonderful. Now you want to do portfolio analysis, which is the maybe tied for second. Actually, it probably beats out the task workflow. Portfolio analysis is wow. Wow, you got all your projects in there. You go and say, here's our priorities. You can do CEO priorities. Of course, the CEO is going to be like, I want revenue or something like that. And the chief operating officer is going to go, no, I want to cut costs. So they fight, right? And everybody has a different idea about which projects should be cut based on those priorities. So you go, you define them all, and then you go and you tag all the projects comparing each other to each other, and you run it, and it tells you exactly which projects based on those priorities. Awesome. Just awesome. Okay, I'm going to skip through a lot of this stuff. There's the OData service if you wanted to do your own type of stuff, and there was plenty of sessions that kind of talked about that. Summary is Project Server is easy to install and configure, relatively. Remember my little Einstein guy sticking his tongue out, right? There's a lot of steps you have to configure. I just walked through a lot of that, okay? Some of them are optional. You don't have to do cost types. You don't have to do departments. And by the way, you now know what all these things when I say stuff. You don't have to do custom fields. You don't have to do lookup tables, but you're going to lose a lot of functionality, okay? The reporting aspect's really important. Getting all of that set up, that optional departments aspect, if you don't set that departments and everywhere across all Project Server, you're again, going to lose out on a lot of functionality. So it's important to get that going. I love OData and REST. If you're going to do any type of custom reporting or build your own tools, that's awesome. And if you're a Devi type, or you're probably not really a Devi type, but if you decide you want to come and see some neat stuff, come Wednesday. With that, I'm going to open up just for a couple more questions, and then I'm going to throw the football out. And I'm going to ask a question, and someone's going to get this book. Yeah.
So if you just want to learn server, how do you install server with Project Professional and just play with it there to learn it?
No, you have to have SharePoint. Yeah, it has to be there, unfortunately. But, yeah, but now you have a free 3 months to go use online, which means you don't have to do anything. Oh, well, yeah. Training? getting hands dirty part, right? Yeah. Yeah. Training classes. Lots of training classes available. Microsoft training partners like Global Knowledge, New Horizons. Lots. They have some stuff because I gave them training content. Yeah. What else? You guys are ready. What is it? 6:08. Okay, so I have a question. Some of you may get, I know one person is going to definitely know what this is, because since there's so many people that are doing timesheets, I might have to rethink my question, but I don't have time. What is one of the, and I'm going to throw the foot, I'm going to ask the question, and then I'm going to throw the football out. And if you get the football, and then you can answer the question, okay? All right? But don't yell the answer out, all right? What is the name of one of the line item classifications in a timesheet that comes out of the box? Okay? You got it? All right. So I'm just going to, y'all just going to rush into the middle of the room and do a little tackle, okay? So here we go. Oh, do you know the answer? You don't? Okay. I figured. I knew. I was like, Administrative, yes, that is one of them. Absolutely, so you got it. Yes. Congratulations, you get this book. You're welcome. Oh, I want my football back, though. All right, so with that, I believe there's like a couple other sessions. If you want to contact me, give in CJ, Twitter, or you can come up. I have a few cards and things. We got our attendee party. Remember, you got to be there. It's not tonight, but it is Tuesday. Nothing really going on unless you got invited to some special vendor party. Lots of other related sessions. Don't forget to fill out the survey, PC 214. Yay! You learned a lot of good stuff, right? All right. There you go. Thank you.